Talking about this parable of the soils, we've been talking about application of that as far as what your heart is the soil, how that's receiving the seed that is sown at various points throughout your life. That's going to happen. We've talked about how something hidden that is concealed is ultimately going to be revealed. And there's a lot of Jesus sort of slowly revealing who he is, how he's teaching, those kind of things. And I think what we start to see here is those thoughts coming together with this more of an unfolding of who Jesus is, how people respond to that. And we're going to see a couple of different examples of that as you start to see him do some things that he hadn't quite done yet. And it's very interesting. So let's look in chapter 4, verse 35. And we'll read through the end of the chapter. It says, on that day, when evening had come, he said to them, let us go across to the other side. And leaving the crowd, they took him with them in the boat, just as he was, and other boats were with him. And a great windstorm arose, and the waves were breaking into the boat, so that the boat was already filling. But he was in the stern, asleep on the cushion, and they woke him and said to him, teacher, do you not care that we are perishing? And he awoke and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, peace, be still. And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. And he said to them, why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith? And they were filled with great fear and said to one another, who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? This is one of my favorite stories to read because there's a lot here and we are going to spend like 5 minutes on it. So it's hard for me to sort of go through this, but this is just a cool story. It's very interesting to think about all the details, but I want to just point out maybe really quickly that one of the things that Jesus is doing here is he's reversing situations, and he's doing it in a way that is always the complete opposite of the original situation. Got the storm, waves, wind, absolutely crazy, people terrified. The disciples wake him up. They actually charge him that he doesn't care. Like, don't you care that we're going to die? He rebukes the wind and the sea. And what's the result after that? Complete opposite. And he steps in into a hopeless, helpless, desperate situation that normal men feel out of control in when they're in that situation. And this is what results. We're going to see that theme unfolding the rest of this morning, but let's just really, I think the point of all this is look at the disciples' reaction. How should they have responded? Yeah, everybody's high-fiving and slapping each other on the back, and we made it. But how do they respond? Yeah. Yeah. After everything's over, we're stuck in the boat with this powerful guy. Like, you would think they're not scared anymore, but notice when Jesus, after everything's calm, he says, why are you scared? Not why were you scared, why are you scared? And to me, the implication is here, they're still scared. Because what did that guy just do? What just happened here? Shouldn't they have known better?
They've seen it.
Yeah,
Gretchen. Well, it may be, I read it as they're fishermen, they're used to dealing with this. This is something that hits them in the gut that he's got power over this thing that they've never been able to do it.
You would think if anybody understood this water dynamic, these storms, like it would be these guys. They live out there practically. And they're probably thinking, wow, you know, if I could have done that, that would have been great. But being subject to the whims of nature, they couldn't exercise that control. And here's somebody that did it. Exciting, maybe, but really the result here is that they're terrified. And I think what we're seeing here is Jesus is revealing a little bit more of himself to them. He's starting to pull back that curtain a little bit more. And the question then is, okay, guys, what are you going to do with this information?
And the funny part, or ironic, or whatever the right word would be, they asked him, do you not care that we're perishing? And that was the very reason he was on the earth, is because they were perishing.
Yeah. Yeah.
From a spiritual perspective, this story here is really a salvation story.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about these guys being so scared for their life. And then there's this one that they couldn't do anything to save themselves. Here's this one who's so powerful, he speaks a word and it's all calm. They're saved. And so there's a fear that's associated with that too that we can relate to. Because our salvation story is the same thing, really. It's just a different setting. We were in a boat on the water, but we were in the world and the water was the world. So the water was getting in us, we were starting to sink.
Yep. And then you can take that idea and sort of carry it forward that at how many points in our lives are we in a boat in the middle of a storm and we feel like these guys where it's all hopeless. There's a lot of imagery here. It's very powerful that ultimately I think is illustrating some very deep truths about who Jesus is and what he does. Right? Yeah, it's another puzzle piece to their understanding. David and John.
It's kind of there's a faith and trust element in here where they've been growing in what they understand it to be, and it's just been blown wide open. And so now, I mean, sure, they're glad to be protected from the storm, but now, is he, you know, what's he going to do next? And are we safe with him? I mean, you know, we don't know. And so, I mean, he, with that kind of power, It's kind of funny because they really haven't learned to trust.
Hold on to the concept of faith and trust there, because we're going to see that come up a lot more. And you think that what he did there is interesting? Just wait till you see what he does next, because what we're going to see next is all happening in the same day, John.
You know, I can't help think about the thread of water in relationship to perishing or salvation throughout the Bible. You have the flood, you have Naaman the leper, and of course baptism. You have in all those instances, those who have faith or who obey are saved by water, and those that, you know, at least in some of the instances who don't have faith and don't believe, perish by water.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Brad, go ahead.
I got to bring this up because you don't really see it in the English, but it says, and they feared with great fear. They were mega fearful after this was over. I mean, they were really shook up by the event and then Jesus' ability.
I want another word to pay attention for as we keep moving through chapter 5. We're going to see faith and we're going to see fear and we're going to see those in a very interesting relationship a couple more times. So just keep an eye out for that. Okay, last comment on this and then we're going to keep moving. It's fun, isn't it? This is a great story.
Well, it struck me for the first time, if you read in verse 36, they took him in the boat with them just as he was.
Uh-huh.
So they're thinking, we're taking this man in the boat with us. And then they're filled with great fear when they saw his power, because they were thinking, oh, well, this man, this teacher, we're taking him with us, and but just as he was. But just as he was able to do
this. Yeah. Yeah, he didn't have anything with him. Okay, so they get to the other side. Let's pick up in chapter 5. We're going to read down through verse 20 just to get the full flow of this story. And the way this reads to me, this is happening sequentially. Like, this is literally just the day, the next thing that happens. So verse 1, they came to the other side of the sea, to the country of the Gerasenes. And when Jesus had stepped out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit. He lived among the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain, for he had often been bound with shackles and chains, but he wrenched the chains apart, and he broke the shackles in pieces. No one had the strength to subdue him. Night and day, among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always crying out and cutting himself with stones. And when he saw Jesus from afar, he ran and fell down before him. And crying out with a loud voice, he said, "What have you to do with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I adjure you by God, do not torment me. For he was saying to him, come out of the man, you unclean spirit. Jesus said to him, what is your name? He replied, my name is Legion, for we are many. And he begged him earnestly not to send them out of the country. Now a great herd of pigs were feeding there on the hillside, and they begged him, saying, send us to the pigs, let us enter them. So he gave them permission, and the unclean spirits came out and entered the pigs, and the herd, numbering about 2,000, rushed down to the steep bank of the sea and drowned in the sea. The herdsmen fled and told in the city and in the country. And the people came to see what it was that had happened. And they came to Jesus, and they saw the demon-possessed man in his right. And they came to Jesus and saw the demon-possessed man, the one who had the legion, sitting there, clothed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. And those who had seen it described to them what had happened to the demon-possessed man and to the pigs. And they began to beg Jesus to depart from their region. As he was getting in the boat, the man who had been possessed with demons begged him that he might be with him. And he did not permit him, but said to him, go home to your friends and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you. And he went away and began to proclaim in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and everyone marveled. Lots here, lots of details. I'm just going to share some observations, and we can use that to sort of think through some of this stuff. Here's my first observation. Under demonic or satanic, maybe, influence, this man was in a hopeless situation. And it's one that nobody could do anything about. You see that? What do we learn about this guy? Jesus steps out of the boat. Here comes this guy running down to him, and Mark kind of describes the situation for us. What was that? Yeah, out of control. No chains, no shackles. They might have tried to tie him up, and then he just breaks them, and nobody had the strength to subdue him. Where's he living at?
Tombs.
Yeah, tombs or caves. He's out in the mountainside, it said, out in the country, away from people. He might be suicidal. There's certainly an element of cutting himself with stones that seems to tie into that. Self-destructive. He's tormented. Yeah. He had a family. He came from somewhere. One of the points I was reading, somebody said that if you think about it, this is kind of where, I don't know if this person meant this symbolically or not, but he said this is kind of where Satan wants people to go. You can look at it physically, you can look at it symbolically, but the point is, under that influence, you're going to end up out of control, tormented, and in this kind of situation.
Self-destructive.
David?
Not only can the people cannot control him, but he can't control himself either.
Okay.
And it's a real dangerous situation. I mean, if he hurts himself, he can certainly be a threat to them. I mean, they just got, it's kind of like the storm a little bit. There's something that's very powerful. They don't want to do with it, but they at least they're used to it, and they can kind of stay away and try to protect themselves best they can.
Yeah, he's definitely not near people, it seems like. And these herdsmen maybe even were keeping their distance. So surely they knew he was out there. And that was the only thing that could be done for him, is just to keep him out there. Hold on to that thought for a second, because that's where Jesus comes into the equation again. You're going to see this theme here. Another observation is that it seems like there's a lot going on in the spiritual world that we just don't know much about, because it feels like these demons were surprised to see Jesus, but they knew him. His reputation certainly preceded him. And there was no question at all about who was in charge here. You see it, Steve?
That's what I got. It's almost like there was a spiritual conversation before anything was spoken, because the guy was doing the name of Christ and bowed down before him and then said, what do you have to do
for me? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's no sense here that Jesus says, hey, you get down here. This guy comes running to him, and what does he do? Where does he end up? At the feet of Jesus. I mean, he bows before him. He fell down before him. And I don't think that's out of, like, belief or anything, because it's a demon, but it's certainly an acknowledgement of what roles they're playing in this whole thing. There's a lot here. I mean, we're just getting, you know, you just kind of scratch the surface of everything here. And if you were trying to do a full study of the spiritual world and spiritual realm, this had to be, this would have to be a part of it. But ultimately, I think what matters is how these demons are responding to Jesus. And again, where they end up is running to him and falling at his feet. I don't think that's something that should be missed here. They immediately recognize their place and they acknowledge him as Jesus, the Son of the Most High God. Contrast that with the religious leaders. Contrast that with the guys that were just in the boat with Jesus. They're still not entirely sure, but the demons believe and tremble. Okay. Jesus has the power to do what no one else could do. And he didn't even have to force these demons to leave the guy. He just acknowledged the request like, yeah, okay, go ahead and do that. Because they knew Jesus could do worse. Notice the reversal of the situation. When the people came to see what the herdsmen told them about, they found the man sitting, clothed, and in his right mind. It didn't say that he was naked earlier, but why not? He's running around probably without clothes on. If you live out in the tombs, possessed by demons, that's probably what you do. These people find him and, hey, situation's been completely and totally reversed. The thing that we couldn't do, we tried to solve by chains and shackles. We tried to subdue him. Jesus doesn't need that. He solves the situation, which was an entirely hopeless situation. People couldn't do anything with it. Jesus does.
I think about all the sin that we try to solve with chains and shackles and laws and whatnot, human ways, and generally they, most of the time, fail because we're not looking to the right source to solve some, a lot of these problems.
Okay.
Curious, you know, about the fact that these people are raising swine, and that, you know, looking on my map here of this area, had Jesus gone into an area where there were Gentiles to preach?
Seems to be that way. You notice at the end of the story, Jesus doesn't say, now don't tell anybody about this. What does he say? Complete opposite. Get out there and tell everybody. Go and tell your friend, go and tell your family, tell your friends what the Lord's done for you, which is the complete opposite of what he's been telling a lot of these folks in Jewish areas. And so what I'm wondering is if, because he's in Gentile area, they're not going to have these preconceptions that a lot of the Jews would. And so he encourages them to go out and tell that. I think there's a lot of indication there that he probably has done that. Yeah.
That fits well with the idea that Wayne has taught us in recent months about all these things in the Old Testament having to do with the Messiah was not just for the Jews, but it was about bringing the Gentiles back into that as well.
Yeah. And yet, despite all that, how do the people respond when they come and see this, everything that's happened? They see the dead pigs float in the water. They see this guy sitting next to Jesus.
They're scared.
Go away. Get out of here.
But maybe with some time, get used to seeing that he's this way, he stays this way, that they can, you know, kind of sink in that this is a good thing. And whereas right now, I'm not sure, is he going to blow up in a minute? What? And, you know, and so with time, whereas he wanted to go with Jesus, well, he could have gone with Jesus and tell everybody, I used to be like that. Well, they didn't know the story. These people all know it. So the big impact is going to be here for them to see. It really is a big story.
Yeah. Dickie?
I don't think you can jump to conclusions about this is a swine farmer. I insured a farm one time for a Jewish guy, and I went out there and I looked out in the field, and he had hundreds of hogs out there. And I never said a word, but he looked at me and kind of smiled. And he said, I don't eat pork, but said I can make a lot of money raising pigs.
Yeah. But yeah, we just don't know it. It's just from reading, it appears that it probably is a Gentile area. Regardless. And, you know, Jesus' response to telling the guy to go out and tell everybody what he did. Jesus does what he wants to according to the situation. We don't have to have the, you know, there's not a handbook of, you know, the Messiah on earth. This is how you carry yourself. That doesn't exist, so he does what he wants to according to the situation, and he deemed it necessary in this situation to get out there and tell people. There's a lot of detail here. We're going to keep moving just for the sake of that, but I just want to, again, notice the symbolism here, and Heath kind of pointed this out at the end of that story of the calming of the sea. This is, I think, symbolic of why Jesus is here. It's a picture of salvation, and every unbeliever is represented by this guy, right? Jesus can free you from the power of Satan. He can release you from this captivity that you're under in a way that no one else can do. Kind of what you were saying, Jonathan. There's this thing that we try and do, and it doesn't work. We need Jesus. Notice what happens after that. Primary goal in evangelism is to bring glory to Jesus. Go tell everybody what God's done for you. That's all he tells him to do. After he's been released, after he's been saved, there's something there. There's something to think about. Proclaim his power. Proclaim his greatness. Great symbolism. And I think ultimately this isn't just about casting a demon out. It's not about the miracle. It's about what it represents. Continue to see that as we go. Now, the next section, we're going to read verse 21 all the way through the end of the chapter, but here's Mark's sandwich approach to his storytelling again, where he starts a story, you're moving along through the story, and then he throws something else at you that's a different story, and then he comes back to the original story that happened, and so it's kind of like some kind of meat between two pieces of bread, okay? You see that happening a lot in the way Mark is communicating here. Because of that, you got two stories here. I want to look at those individually, but we're going to go ahead and read the text as it's written, and we're going to look at the stories separately. I don't feel like I'm explaining that well at all, but you stick with me here. Verse 21. And when Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered about him, and he was beside the sea. Then came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, my little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live. And he went with him. And a great crowd followed him and thronged about him. And there was a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years, who had suffered much under many physicians and spent all that she had and was no better, but rather grew worse. She had heard reports about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, if I touch even his garments, I will be made well. And immediately the flow of blood dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of her disease. And Jesus, perceiving in himself that power had gone out from him, immediately turned about in the crowd and said, who touched my garments? And his disciples said to him, you see the crowd pressing around you, and yet you say, who touched me? And he looked around to see who had done it. But the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came in fear, trembling, fell down before him, and told him the whole truth. And he said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace and be healed of your disease. While he was still speaking, there came from the ruler's house some who said, your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further? But overhearing what they said, Jesus said to the ruler of the synagogue, do not fear, only believe. And he allowed no one to follow him except Peter and James and John, the brother of James. They came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue, and Jesus saw a commotion, people weeping and wailing loudly. And when he had entered, he said to them, why are you making a commotion and weeping? The child is not dead, but sleeping. And they laughed at him. But he put them all outside and took the child's father and mother and those who were with him and went in where the child was. Taking her by the hand, he said to her, Talitha kumi, which means, little girl, I say to you, arise. And immediately the girl got up and began walking, for she was 12 years of age, and they were immediately overcome with amazement. And he strictly charged them that no one should know this and told them to give her something to eat. He thought that the calming of the storm was impressive, and if he thought that the demon-possessed man being healed is impressive, there's more coming. And this kind of goes into a direction still more that Jesus hasn't quite done yet. He's, again, that light, that lamp is being revealed even more. I want to look at first at verses 25 through 34, which is the woman that comes to Jesus in this crowd. And then we'll look at the other story standalone. Here's another observation. This woman is the picture of desperate hopelessness. Why would I say that? Yeah.
Ostracized.
Yeah, explain that, Gretchen.
She has an issue of blood. When under the old law, if you are bleeding, you can't be near anybody.
Yeah.
You have to be isolated. And so this has been going on for years, and she's been isolated. She can't be around people because if they touch her, they are unclean.
Yeah. So, sick for 12 years. She says she's suffered much under many physicians. She's gotten worse instead of better. She spent everything she had. She was, because of the culture, not just a woman, but a socially ostracized woman even further. Like, everything about her situation is hopeless. It's terrible. But she'd heard reports about Jesus and believed that even touching his garments would heal her. We don't even know her name. Notice that? No name. We have lots of names in the Bible. We don't know hers. So she's very much an anonymous person, which maybe is meant to indicate, maybe symbolically, that she was a nobody. Because socially, at the time at least, that was how she would have been seen. And she sort of carries herself, it feels like she's carrying herself with this attitude of unworthiness. I think that's what her actions indicate. Not coming up to Jesus and asking for healing, but just stealing it, if you will. Just reaching out and touching it without trying to cause a big scene. But she's immediately and noticeably healed. Like, if you're sick for 12 years, you're going to know what that feels like, right? And it says that she notices immediately that I'm better. It's bothered her for 12 years. That's a long time. Think about, man, 12 years? Think about your life in January 2007.
And it also, I had never noticed this, it said she had suffered under many physicians. So not only had she had the problem, she was suffering. She was enduring some kind of pain or torment or something at the, quote, care of these doctors.
Yeah. And that's maybe why she's getting worse instead of better, it says. And that's happening for 12 years. It hit me like, that is a really long time. I went to my computer this morning to see what pictures I had of myself from January 2007. And y'all didn't even know me then. None of you knew me. Which is weird to think about, but, you know, that's a very, very, very long time. A lot can happen in that amount of time, and that's how she's lived in this situation. So to me, that's just driving home the point of, now it's better. Now it's fixed. Jesus did it, but nobody else could. Here he comes, really didn't do anything other than just walk through the crowd, but she was healed, even by a touch of the clothes. Notice that she's healed by her faith. Why did Jesus stop? He could have just kept going, but he stops. He calls her out in a way that brings attention to what just happened. Any idea why?
Well, for one thing, he felt something without really being prepared for it, I guess, because the scriptures insinuating as if he was drained.
Okay, David?
Other times that he
demonstrate his power. It's really been his own decision to do it. And here she, it does seem a little sneaky, but she probably with no option is probably fearful. If I ask, he might say no. You know, and there, you know, she just, this is a pitiful position for she is.
Okay. Keith?
You know, this is a situation where people were throwing you around him, as the text described. And we've already said that she would have been ostracized and a social outcast. She shouldn't have been in that crowd. I'm assuming she was in disguise, else she would have been ratted out. Now she's healed, and Jesus is going to say she's healed. I think that's to her benefit, now that all these other people around her will be able to accept her, because he's healed.
Okay, Gretchen, then Eva.
Well, it's emphasizing it's your faith. You believed it.
Okay.
It's your faith. You knew this would happen, and because of that, you're healed.
Okay.
Well, I think there's another lesson for the disciples here. So they had just gone through this with the boat, and they had just gone through this with the swine, and then they're almost saying, there's all these people about you, and you're asking who touched you? Like, how could you know who touched you?
Yeah.
That somebody touched you with the purpose, and yet again, she demonstrates more faith in Christ's ability than they do.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure why he did. He didn't have to. He knew who touched him, I'm sure. You know, he didn't have to do that. But notice what happened as a result. She fessed up. She came, it says, in fear and trembling. So there's that fear again. She fell down before him. So where does she end up? Right at his feet. Same place that demon-possessed man ended up. She told him the whole truth. There might be more going on here. I'm just for your consideration, the same word that's can be translated healed can also be translated saved. So she was certainly healed of an infirmity, but maybe Jesus is tapping into more. And again, symbolically, stories about a hopeless and desperate person who falls at the feet of Jesus and experiences healing or salvation. You see the undertones here? You see the symbolism here? Now, let's compare that with Jairus' daughter. Jairus. The story's not about the daughter. This is about Jairus. She's just a mode or a vehicle through which Jesus is trying to, I think, work with Jairus here. Jairus is also a picture of desperate hopelessness. You've got, I don't know if there's a coincidence here. How old's the daughter? 12? How long's this lady been sick? 12? I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what that means. Anyways, you've got a 12-year-old daughter. She's sick, about to be dead. He comes to Jesus. What do we know about him? He's the ruler of a synagogue, so here's one of those religiously elite people, possibly.
If he's a leader of the synagogue, that means he's a Pharisee.
Okay. These ain't the kind of guys that are running to Jesus for help, are they?
No.
He may not be predisposed to it at all. And yet, here he is coming to see him. He's got this daughter who's sick near death. That's maybe his last option. And so he's desperate. We know his name. Compare this to the woman. We know his name. He's probably got a lot to be proud of. Maybe thinks very highly of himself. Socially, he probably has a lot to lose by doing this. And yet, despite all that, where does he end up? At the feet of Jesus. You notice that? First thing he does, he comes and he falls right down at his feet, and he implored him earnestly to touch his daughter to heal her. Jesus goes with him. He understands how immediate this situation has to be, I'm sure. And knowing all that, he still stops to talk to the woman and all this. Intentionally. Remember, he didn't have to stop, but he stops. And he calls, you know, it's a delay. He's delaying. If you're Jairus, you mad? I mean, you got him to come with you. Let's go. And there's all these people around. It's a traffic jam. And then Jesus stops and starts talking to this lady. My daughter's dying. That had to have been very, very frustrating, I would think, to Jairus. And what we find is that while he's talking to this woman, the girl dies. These messengers come and say, she's dead. possible that Jesus is intentionally stalling?
Wouldn't be the first time.
Yeah.
He did it with Lazarus.
Right. And he did it because
he wanted to show his power and an example to the apostles.
Don't lose sight of the fact here that Jesus is driving Jairus to an even more desperate place to maybe bring about the situation that Brad just described. I can't help but think Jesus knows exactly what he's doing here. And that doesn't make him a horrible person. That doesn't make him an ogre. That's just out to make people suffer. People might look at that and say, why would he do that? Well, he's got a purpose. And it's about bringing, I think, Jairus to faith here. Tim, then David. That's interesting, yeah.
But you know, they're going to see a daughter, and he calls the other one a daughter.
Okay, Tim.
I'm thinking of a lot of these miracles, and you know, we talked, I think, last week a little bit about the man that was born blind, and why was he born blind? Because of sin or his mother, and Jesus' response is, well, neither, but the glory of God can be revealed. The same thing with Jairus' daughter, he's late, so the glory of God can be revealed. Why did he stop him? Talk to the woman, the glory of God
to be revealed. Yeah. Yeah, Brad.
And the same with the parables. This was for true seekers. This was for true seekers also. Jairus, I love what Jesus says. Don't be afraid, only believe. He's at the end of his rope. When we're at the end of our rope, are we going to trust Jesus and seek him? Are we going to throw our hands up and say, forget it? He's bailed on me. I'm bailing on him.
Yeah.
We've been listening to you, please.
Right. It's a great, you see that statement. That's why I said earlier, notice these things brought together. Do not fear, only believe. Fear gets right in the way of belief. John.
You know, we've been talking about desperation and desperate situations. And I think that's when, you know, most people come to Christ is when they realize the desperate situation they're in with their soul.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the gospel is for desperate people, right? That's what it's about. So again, you see the undertones here. You see, this is a story about a hopeless and desperate person who falls at the feet of Jesus and experiences healing. Anna. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting how they both have the same conception about how Jesus works here. Let me summarize because we're about out of time and then we'll have a prayer. So we've looked at four stories this morning. I apologize for the speed that we had to go through because they're awesome and there's a lot of detail here that we could talk about for a long time. But Jesus has demonstrated power over a storm or nature, a man with a demon, a disease, and death. In all these instances, normal men felt helpless in situations that were out of their control, and Jesus was the answer. And the desperation heightened their sense of dependence on him. Okay, you see that. That desperation, as you're saying, pushes them to that point. Jesus provides, in these stories, he provides peace, he provided freedom, he provided healing, and he provided resurrection. Sounds like gospel terms, right? Again, don't miss the symbolism here of what Jesus is doing. It's not about the miracles. That's a window through which to see who he is and what he can do. No matter who you are, a faithful response to Jesus will find you in the exact same place. Where's that?
Saved.
At his feet. Whether you're Jairus, whether you're this anonymous woman, whether you're a demon-possessed man, whether you're those disciples, we don't really see them doing it, but that's where they should have been. Yeah, they're at the bottom of the boat, terrified still. True faith is going to be self-risking trust in Jesus. Desperation is God's means of drawing men to himself. And when you're in that point, that's where you're going to end up, with nothing left that you can do yourself. But here's what's interesting. Again, Jesus isn't doing this just to make people suffer and to watch them squirm, because then he's putting himself in service, in a lowly service to these people that have need. Frightened disciples, human beings that are possessed by demons, these timid people, these sufferers in the crowd, parents who have no other recourse for their children, you know, all these things. He's serving them in a lowly way. And so more is being revealed about Jesus. And I think the question is, you know, as we think about this, that seed coming at us, right? Seeds being sown, seeds hitting us, it's hitting our hearts. That's what's the soil of your heart. How are you going to respond to that? That's what people in Jesus' day were dealing with. I think we still also have to continue to think about those things as we're reading this. Okay. What we'll see as we move into chapter 6 is that we're going to see opposite reactions to what we've seen here in chapter 5. Let's have a prayer real fast, and then we'll be dismissed.